Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is an ENN special report. Now reporting.
Peter, you look very handsome.
ENN's at 6.
When the clock struck 6, it meant one thing.
I want to go chase the squall.
Peter's nothing interesting to say.
This is Gil.
Now, from the ESPN New York news desk, here's
Rosenbaum or whatever that guy's name is.
No wonder your show is number one.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to ENN on a Thursday evening already. It's 6:09 because they have no respect for the clock or ENN. But it was worth it for that Alyssa Milano story. After looking at her Twitter, I do think it would be inappropriate for me to randomly ask her if she made out with Michael Kay at the ESPN party.
No, nobody said anybody made out with anybody. Stop it.
This is how stories change over time, you know? One day when the documentary comes out, like The Last Dance, we'll get the real story. We'll start off tonight by saying good evening to Michael.
Say my name, say my name.
Wow, beautiful. RJ, you might have to make a remix. And good evening to Don.
I'm a big Willie guy.
Sure. So, before we even get to sports, we need to take a moment to say goodbye to a couple of people. Like Michael said the other day, it just seems like there's so much bad news, and more came today. First of all, from the world of film, Brian Dennehy, who is a tremendous actor. Don, of course, knows him from like 80 things. I and people of my age range will most remember him as the lovable and adoring father of Tommy Callahan in the movie Tommy Boy.
It's so cool that you're getting married Saturday. So where'd you guys meet?
He goes for me. We met at that Fat Farm spa resort thing. Beverly was one of the trainers. In fact, she was the only one of the trainers I didn't want to plant 6 feet under a lettuce patch. Wait till you hear this, Tommy.
She's got a son. He worked at the spa, too. I met him. He's a terrific guy. You're really going to like him. He's coming here today for the wedding.
Tommy, it sounds funny saying this, but my son is going to be your new brother.
Brother? I'm going to have a brother? I've always dreamed about having a brother.
Speak of the devil.
Oh, brother! Brother?
I'm Paul. You must be Tommy.
Brothers don't shake hands. Brothers gotta hug.
Of course, that's Rob Lowe, and now we don't have Chris Farley anymore or Brian Dennehy, right. But rest in peace, Don. I'm sure you have a few words on him, but that to me is what's most near and dear to my heart. But he was a tremendous actor, stage actor as well.
Yeah, he was in a bunch of stuff that I love. Tommy Boy was first and foremost. He was in First Blood. He was the cop in that. A really underrated movie from the mid-80s, FX.
Yeah, I saw that people saying that on Twitter.
Yeah, very good. And he was also in a movie that a lot of people pan, but I actually enjoyed, was the 96 Romeo and Juliet.
What was he in that? The Claire Danes vehicle.
He was the father, I believe. I think he was Juliet's father.
Wow.
He was also in Rambo.
Well, First Blood.
Rambo First Blood.
Yeah. And Stallone said that he loved him, and he said that he was a Vietnam vet, Dennehy, and he helped shape the Rambo character.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
There's something about the casting they hit in Tommy Boy that made him look so realistic as Farley's father. And they both had this very sweet, big guy way about them that just always made the movie extra special. Because the whole movie, of course, is about that character dying. Now it's extra sad when you watch Tommy Boy to know that both are gone.
And he won a Tony as Willie Loman in Death of a Salesman on Broadway.
Wow. Really great career. He was 81. And then at just 69 years old today, after a really tough day for the WWE yesterday, they lost employee 001, the first ever employee of the WWF. Howard Finkel passed away. such an iconic voice as a ring announcer. So many of the great moments you think of in wrestling from the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, you think of his signature voice, including this call. This is his announcement at the end of what I believe to be the greatest match in WrestleMania history, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat and Macho Man Randy Savage.
History made here in the Silverdome, part of
ladies and gentlemen, the winner of this contest.
He left the company. He actually stayed with the company forever, but he left a TV role several years ago. He would pop up here and then. He did a Legends House on the WWE Network. He came back and did some announcing for CM Punk as his special ring announcer back in 2011. But I met him only a few times, didn't know him well. But everyone I know who did know him well speaks of him being the sweetest man who was just simply the world's biggest wrestling fan. And literally, when Vince McMahon officially, when it officially became the WWF after being the WWWF, he was employee number one for Vince McMahon. So,
and I also read today, Peter, that he is the person that coined the phrase WrestleMania.
I'm glad you mentioned that. He had the idea for WrestleMania. Who knows what this entire business is if he doesn't come up with that name? Because as massive as the entire promotion was and the brilliance about around WrestleMania, particularly 3, which sent it over the moon, if the name's not good, isn't there a chance history is completely different?
Yeah, I think that a lot of the success of the Super Bowl is what a great name, and that came from Hunt.
You know, Lamar Hunt's daughter, yeah, I think, was playing with one of those, like, Super Bowls.
Yeah.
And that's where he came up with the idea for it.
So like the Stanley Cup. If it was called the Irving Cup, I don't think it would be the same thing.
you had to give the one example that kind of ruins the point.
Right.
Because the Stanley Cup, really, what is that? I mean, I know it is. It's Lord Stanley's Cup. I understand, but you could really throw any name on that. I guess it would still work. It's a beautiful cup.
If it had 100 years of history, Michael, I think we would have adjusted.
Right. No.
If it was Lord Edward's Cup, I don't think it would be the same.
You think no one cares? No one's interested anymore.
Right.
Well, we talked about it. The Last Dance. It's this weekend. It's Sunday. It's on ESPN. And Michael Jordan went on Good Morning America today to promote. And he spoke about his final year with the Bulls.
Well, it was a trying year. We all were trying to enjoy that year, knowing that it was coming to an end. I was hoping that, you know, the beginning of the season, it basically started when Jerry Krause told Phil that, you know, he can go 82-0 and he would never get the chance to come back. And, you know, knowing that I married myself to him, you know, obviously, and if he wasn't going to be a coach, then, you know, obviously I wasn't going to play. So Phil started off the year by saying this is the last dance, and we played it that way. You know, so mentally it just kind of it tugged at you throughout the course of the year, you know, but that this had to come to an end. But it also centered our focus to making sure we end it right. So, I mean, as sad as it sounded at the beginning of the year, we tried to rejoice and enjoy the year and finish it off the right way.
He also spoke about changing his name from Mike to Michael after he hit the shot at North Carolina.
Well, up until that point, no one knew who I was. You know, I was a college kid other than the university, but outside the university, I was just known as Mike Jordan, you know. And when I hit that shot, my whole name became Michael Jordan. And I think it resonated with a lot of people outside of UNC. So, I mean, and I just started piling on that name itself from the successes that I endured, you know, throughout the rest of my career. It wasn't about Michael. It wasn't about Mike. It was more about Michael. Yeah.
You know, it's one thing I think is really fascinating here, Michael, about the Jordan, the movie, The Last Dance Sunday, is that we have all had a certain thought of Michael Jordan forever. And my image of him is I loved watching him play. I mean, though I didn't root for him, obviously I was a teenager during his prime. So he was just absolute appointment viewing. I feel blessed to have seen every major moment he ever had in his career live. And it was amazing. That said, never thought particularly highly of him as a guy, right? There was a lot of stuff around him with the gambling, with the, you know, Republicans buy sneakers too, all the different things. He never really seemed to want to step out there. The stories of kind of how brutal a competitor he was. But I wonder, and I know this movie won't show him completely in a great light, but it might show him in a human light. From where he was at the Hall of Fame speech a few years ago, which he still appeared to be that old version of him that was just bizarre and sort of vindictive, to what we saw at the Kobe funeral, I wonder if moving forward, you know, he ages into someone that we think of slightly differently and we're able to gain a little bit more of a human connection with, let's be honest, the most celebrated athlete in American sports history.
Well, people definitely, it seems like, become better versions of themselves when they get closer to the cashier. So as you get older, I think that, you know, maybe you reflect on
people
things
figure
a little
things
bit
out,
more.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I'm curious. It would be kind of neat if, like, you know, think about, for example, how currently the version you think of Mike Tyson is vastly different than the version you thought of in 1999.
Mm-hmm.
And now, granted, Tyson's always been a lot more honest and straightforward, even at his worst times, than Jordan, who was always very protective. That's sort of, you know, I used to always make this was an old school radio argument I used to enjoy in my early talk radio days, of Jordan's a worse guy than Tyson. Everyone thinks Tyson's a bad guy, but we know everything about him. We know nothing about this guy. And I just am curious to see whether we learn more about him and he changes. So I'm really looking forward to it. The Last Dance premieres Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN.
So there are 10 episodes, each an hour each. I thought it was 2 hours.
No, it's five. It's 10 episodes an hour each, but they're airing two back-to-back every Sunday.
Okay.
So that's, and by the way, you messed that up because of me. I said at some point this week, 20 hours, so I'm stupid. It's
no,
five.
That makes me even stupider because I should never listen to you.
It's a great point. Back on you. You're 100% right. So, well, Michael, this story just changed, but yesterday, Fox Sports' Jay Glazer reported that the Rams' Brian Allen was the first player in the NFL to say that he publicly tested positive for COVID-19. Now, Michael has added a name we all know, Von Miller. Brian Allen said he told Fox Sports that he lost all smell and taste, which we've heard from a lot of COVID-19 victims, since first being diagnosed 3 weeks ago. But other symptoms like stiffness and headaches have gone away. And he expects to receive an all clear this week. He's a fourth round pick of the Rams back in 2018. You knew that already, of course. We all did. And now, yeah, we heard the same about Von Miller, who's expected to give a statement tomorrow.
There was a story today in the Daily News. Jason Collins, he had it. And boy, this is a healthy former NBA basketball player who's in his early 40s. And he said it was one of the worst things ever. You know, he went to the hospital. He said, you know, he didn't have the high temperatures, but he had this terrible pain in his heart and his chest and, you know, and his partner was coughing and he had the fevers. But, you know, again, a top-of-the-line athlete for, like, I think he played in the NBA for 14 years. And he said that he thought he was going to die. So anybody that thinks that, well, I'm in good shape, I'll be able to handle this. All these people that talk tough, just open up. You know, let us do what we want. We'll take our chances until you get it or somebody that you love gets it. And then they have such a hard time. Everybody thinks it's an old person disease. And I'll tell you what, old people aren't expendable. Just because they're 85, that doesn't mean that it's okay to let them go. That's what bothers me about all this.
You didn't like the clip today I saw of Dr. Oz saying,
oh, my goodness, I wasn't even going to bring it up.
Why? Let's reopen the schools because, you know, it's only like they say it'll only, you know, maybe affect the mortality rate by 2 or 3%.
Yeah, what if that mortality rate was one of his relatives? What if the 2 or 3% was somebody he loved or him? Would he be okay? Let's take our chances. Let's just open things up and 2 or 3% more people will die. It's amazing how cavalierly people place the economy over people.
Well, that's why it kind of feels to me like a war, right? Because that's kind of the decisions you make when you go off to war, right? We need to fight this battle. We're willing to have a certain amount of people die for what we believe in, right? Those are the decisions that every president has made going back to the first wars of this country, right? It's that who is expendable for the greater good? And that's what it kind of sounds to me like. Well, we got to get the economy going. So, yeah, I know a few people are going to die, but, you know, for the greater good of the country, I think that those sacrifices have to be made. Otherwise, how are we going to possibly recover from an economic standpoint? But
they do a better job, generally, though, not making you feel maybe not. I mean, listen, that was the whole thing about Vietnam, right? So obviously there have been times in history when people felt this way before. But in this case, it just seems so blatant.
But just to come out and make the comment, like, you know, just throwing statistics out, like, it's 2-3%, or it's, we can live with that, right? Well, not everybody can. Certainly the people that die, and if it, family members, you hate to talk into those terms, but I guess when decisions finally come, guys, isn't that ultimately what's going to be? Is that there may have to be some sacrifices in order to get back to what we're hoping for? You know, that's what's so scary about it.
There's 328 million people in the country. So, you know, you're only talking about what? A few million that would die, that 2 or 3%.
And also, scary. And don't add us, okay? This is just how we're feeling. It's not a political conversation at all. To me, it's a life or death conversation. Yeah. But I think it was Finland, I think, okay? That the people that say, oh, just let us go out and, you know, whatever. And it's called like a herd mentality. So the people that survive and then they'll be, you know, they'll be immune to it, whatever the case may be. Well, I think Finland or Sweden decided to do it that way. You know, just let people out there and, you know, survival of the fittest. And it has gone up so much and it is overwhelming the healthcare system and the hospitals that this is a really deadly virus. And there's nobody that's immune to it. There's just nobody that is. So to just think, let's all go out and see who survives. My goodness, you're okay with that.
And it's one thing, Michael, if it's, hey, do what you want. It's your life, right? If you want to put yourself in that kind of a risk and you can live with the possibility of getting the virus and possibly dying, if you're comfortable with that, more power to you.
Yeah, and it was Sweden, and it's called herd immunity. That's what it is.
It doesn't work that way because you going out there, and now that we know and it's confirmed that you could be asymptomatic and still spread it, all right, you made the sacrifice, but now somebody else is going to have to pay the ultimate sacrifice for what you did. So it's not like I make the mistake, I die. I make the mistake, and maybe I kill 12 other people because of the decision that I made. That's why you can't have this attitude of, well, just open it back up, and the people that want to stay home, stay home. The people that want to go out, go out. All right? And if it was as easy as that, that only the people that went out and decided to risk it got in trouble, that'd be one thing. But that's not the case. They're going to come back home or deal with people that are trying to protect themselves and are trying to stay vigilant. And they end up being the ones to get sick. That's not right.
Well, the president is speaking as we speak, and he said that he's issuing new guidelines that will allow state governors to make the final decision on reopening their economies and loosening social distancing. He went on to say, quote, "We are not opening all at once, but one careful step at a time, and some states will be able to open up sooner than others." So, I mean, that's more comforting news than what he said the other day. It,
100%.
It's almost like he tries to shock you into something that you can't believe is going to happen, and then when the actual step is made, that sounds like the right way to go about it.
That sounds like the reasonable thing.
Absolutely,
everyone would have wanted. If you're talking about Montana,
right,
which has 70, you know, I'm making this up, a couple hundred cases, then sure, it's much different than here, where we may not be able to reopen for a couple of months still.
Yeah, that's the thing, is when we talk about opening sports and opening everything up, I think that we're going to lag pretty far behind. You know, we're going to see the rest of the country moving about, and we may not be able to do that because of how densely
populated
we are.
We're also ahead of people. So the scary part about that is there are places that the numbers could look lower, but it just hasn't started to spread the same way. Whereas we have been aggressively social distancing now for a while, and we may start to taper and move on. And there are places that go back because they think it faded. It really hadn't started yet, and it picks up again. There are, when we do this, there are going to be, unfortunately, states that have setbacks. And
you know, when they talk about reopening, when they
reopen
the country, I mean, not to sound like an ugly New Yorker, if you're not opening up New York, the country's not open yet. It's just not. because this is the economic hub of the country as well.
But people factories, to it's work important in Manhattan. But it's important for factories to be open, right?
But I do think from a small business standpoint, you know, there are businesses in other states where they might be able to open and be able to make some money and be able to save their families. I mean, that's what we're talking about is not just Wall Street and the major companies. We're just talking about the mom and pop stores that might not be able to survive unless they open. And in those states, hopefully they'll be able to do that because it's not as densely populated. It hasn't spread. And if they're careful and they're because it comes down to, I guess, you don't want your medical system to just be overrun. You know, it's one thing for people to get sick, but, you know, you don't want people waiting in hallways or not or being told they can't be taken to the hospital because they're so sick. That's the stuff you got to try to avoid. And that's what New York was at for a while. And now it looks like we kind of stabilized there. But you start opening it up too fast, Peter, we can be a week away from going right back to where we were, you know, a month ago when things really started to explode.
Luke Kuechly retires after 8 seasons. We know that, but now the word is, not surprisingly, he will attempt to make a career in broadcasting. I do not see him having a shortage of opportunities. If it's like every other comparable player, he'll be offered millions of dollars without speaking a word. The PGA Tour does plan to return in mid-June. We said yesterday that the announcement was coming. Well, it is. June 11th to the 14th, that's when they're attempting to come back. Of course, it looks like it'll be done with no one there. But the PGA is making at least an effort to return. Michael said this earlier, Caesars Sportsbook has the win total for the Patriots, the lowest since 2003. However, that win total is still at 8.5, which, Don, puts you still towards the higher end of the league.
I guess you base that on they've got a really good defense.
And with an extra wild card team.
And you're basing it just on who they are, right? Some of this is just history.
Yeah, you're betting on Bill.
You're betting on Bill and what this team is. The same way the Giants have been 5.5 for 3 years straight, it's the same reason you could bet on the Patriots.
But what does just that what say about what does that say about Tom? Right? They think this team can go 9-7 after going 12-4 with Tom Brady.
Well, because
we have no idea
games,
who their quarterback is going to be.
But that's not, it's not all on Tom Brady leaving, though, Don. They lost, like, Van Noy. They lost defensive players that you wouldn't believe that they would let go. So, I mean, there are a lot of pieces that are missing, not just Tom Brady.
Yeah, but that's the biggest one, right? I mean, Van Noy is not costing you 3 games in a season.
Yeah, but there's 2 other defensive players that, you know, they couldn't believe they let go either.
Yeah, but let's also realize that Bill is a defensive coach. So he loses pieces on defense. I have a sneaking suspicion he'll try to patchwork it and make it happen. But listen, they went 12-4 last year, guys, but they certainly did not look like a 12-4 team going down the stretch.
But I will say 3 games is a pretty big. That's a huge impact, saying that their record would be 3 games different. It might not sound like it, but it's big.
Do you think it's 11.5 or 10.5 if Tom stayed?
No.
I would
not if everybody else left.
I think it's probably still 9.5 because I think what they are going to be this year or what they would have been with Tom is what they were in the last month of last season. I think they had an easier schedule early on, and things slowly kind of unraveled where the defense wasn't able to carry them. And then when they started playing tougher teams and they needed points, they couldn't get it.
Is today Belichick's birthday?
68.
68, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He looks good for 68, don't you think?
Yeah.
You know I did notice, though? He does look good for 68, but, boy, he looks completely different than he did when they were 18-0 in that Super Bowl.
But you mean the last 10 years?
Yeah.
Yeah, the last 10 years made a difference.
That perfect season was the 2007 season, Michael. They're coming up on 13 years ago.
Yeah. I understand the math. Thank you. He looks different.
Well, I think we all look different.
I look the same as I did 13 years ago.
That's right.
Absolute same. A little thinner.
One sad thing we had to end on here, guys. The National Transportation Safety Board finished their findings on the accident that killed Roy Halladay. And he was reportedly doing extreme acrobatics and had high levels of amphetamines in his system before the crash.
Really sad.
So,
I mean, his wife came out today and said, please, it just shows that there's nobody perfect, and this is painful because it kind of unearths or re-establishes our pain, and please give us time. But, I mean, what is she supposed to say? But that's just awful that you would get in a plane in that condition and then do those things.
Remind
me,
guys.
But a lot of athletes believe that they're untouchable.
I don't remember. Was there anybody else on the plane?
No.
So I guess thank God for that, right?
Yeah.
Where it's just he made his mistake and he's the one that paid the ultimate price.
But, man. That'll do it for ENN on this Thursday evening. Well,
I want to clap. I just didn't seem like
you can't clap there. You got to go silent
with that with a clap.
Can you promise me something? I don't make any demands on anybody on the show. But since we're in the situation we're in, please always end with a good story.
All right, that's fine.
I want to clap for you.
Hold on. Hold on. Let me give me a second here.
Give me one. Give me something positive.
No. Keep going.
I want to remind you the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Geico. The real value of car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years.
Well, if you got a force to Peter, forget it.
No. I'm going to find something here. I said a Von Miller COVID-19. Hold on. That's not a positive one.
No.
I'm trying to find something good here. Hold on. This is good. It's going to pick up here.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I have something for you, Don. I have something very positive. I forgot about it. Don is one of the guys who's very, very excited about the prospect of Isaiah Simmons. Is that correct?
That's right.
Listen, if you were excited before, listen to what Mike Tannenbaum had to say to Sporting Life about him.
He's such a good athlete. He can move around so much. I think he's a guy that really could play a number of positions, so I can't wait to see what he looks like at the next level. I think he'll start off probably at safety, but athletically he could do so much. He could walk out and cover receivers man-to-man. He can blitz. He can play in the box. There's very few people like him, if at all. He's going to be a lot of fun to watch, and I know, you know, just being around some really creative defensive coaches, people like ESPN's Rex Ryan or Eric Mangini, every day, every week, that game plan could look a little bit different. I'm really excited to see what he could do as a pro player.
All right.
That makes Don feel worse when they take an offensive line.
Yeah, this just confirmed they're not going to take him. But you know what? For now, that's a nice way to end it.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
That's right, man.
Don't miss Michael, Don, and Peter weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York. Or look for us under Listen on the ESPN app.